original 1621, and it's the oldest American gold mine. Love the gold mine. It's a public company. They have 1,600 shareholders. There's about 7 or 8 people that have a majority of the stock. But it's been around, the company's been around since 1896, and it incorporated in California in 1911. So I am an owner, but not the owner. And it's interesting, I came up here in 1974. My dad, I was born and raised in Sacramento, and my dad had bought some stock in this company in the 1950s. And that's, I wanted to return back to Northern California. I went to school at UC Santa Barbara. And then he said, oh, I've got some stock in this old gold company. Why don't we go take a look? So we came up here, and that was before gold was decontrolled. I don't know where any of you are from. Are you from
England?
You're all from England.
Well, no. Some of them
are from the States.
Okay.
Fresno.
This is good, because we always talk about the Cornish people, anybody in the mining places, and it's really nice of you to decide to spend your day up here instead of whatever else the choices were. But I think you'll have a good time in Nevada City, Nevada County. But there's more to the six. Well, let me talk about the museum first, because we'll look around here, and you want to walk around. And this used to be the livery stable. This is one of the few buildings that didn't burn down during the 3 or 4 fires that had happened over the course of most of these gold rush towns. They would burn down. So it was where the horses were stored, and then turned into what's called the Allegheny Supply. The road that you just came on used to be a 2-day drive. And the people here in Allegheny had to rely on themselves. There's no real snow removal. I mean, we've had up to 18 feet of snow here. And lately it's been 4 feet, maybe 4 or 5 feet, last 10, 15 years. So it's not that much. But this building is here, and I purchased this building when the store closed. And we started this museum in, I guess, 1995 for the sole purpose of really honoring the mining industry and the miners and what really made California and what really bonded the whole United States together was with this common language and coming out here to the West to search for the gold in California. It's been characterized as one of the largest peacetime movements of mankind. People came from all over the world. But your ancestors came over and really helped the hard rock mining. It first started with placer mines and in the creeks, and then slowly there was more knowledge about where the actual gold came from. They started working underground here, and that's why us through the 1621 is really the oldest company, and why we're still here is because all the gold isn't gone. But anyway, there was a man that lived in Allegheny, and he died, and his kids just were going to sell everything. And I came along and bought, behind you here is a drill collection. And we have this in there. Some very, come over this way a little bit. I want to show you some of these things and then let you look around here just a little bit. It really was. This was designed for education solely. It was to honor the miners, their families. Come on around a little more closely here. We're gonna be in really tight quarters in a while. So we're gonna stop at certain places and just group and talk about the geology and things in the mine, and you'll get a chance to see things that really most people never see. But to bring back and save the memories that were here to people whose families grew up here, or the kids that are grew up, that to bring back photographs, to do things that are, to really do something not only just for the miners of Allegheny and Sierra Nevada area, but for all of the hard rock miners. You know, in America, the cowboys get all the, they get all the recognition, all the poetry, all the clothes, and the miners right now are probably getting blamed for being the terrible people on earth. But I've grown, and I've been up here now 40, I've been up here 40 years, let's see, 1974, now 35 years, I guess, huh? And I've grown to appreciate something that I never knew about, which was really the mining and what it does for the economy and how it helps all of our lives and what we really need it. And those, the people of the United States have been feeling they can import everything in the world, and we need to develop our own natural resources here. For one reason, we need these blue-collar jobs. And the people, the miners, would come in, and they either like it or they don't. And there's a couple guys working today. They're going to help out on the tour. But Phil O'Donnell collected all of these drills. And you'll see some photographs. Look at some of the photographs. We walk around for a minute here. You guys are early, so we don't have to rush. And I'm in no rush. We'll just take our time and go through some of these things if you want to really look around, too. But the sequence of mining is drilling, blasting, and mucking. And the drilling started out with hand drilling. There's some photographs over there that I cringe every time, because it's a single jack is when, like if I had a hand steel here and it's one hammer, I'd hit it and turn it, hit it and turn it, hit it and turn it. There's a picture over there where there's two miners, and then I imagine it's the newest guy is sitting there holding the drill, and these guys are hitting it with a double jack and turning it like that, and it's just, you know, it's just amazing. So, but then things started to evolve, and you're seeing, so they're always trying to figure out how to do the work a little bit faster, and because labor is a very, very labor-intensive business, and what we do, we're not the people of Nevada. We're not the low-grade mass volumes of people. We move a smaller amount of material. But this was one of the early, this was one of the first mechanized drills. Would have this stand, and they put the stand up, and this, you can see it's doing an impact and it's turning at the same time. Now, there's no water to this one, and the next one, I'll put two of you guys that are down there can do this next one. But this, it's an evolution of what's happened. Went from one person to this one. So if you want, one can get come over on this side, I think, and then somebody on that side, and I just start turning it. Another way.
That way.
Go. Okay, and I don't think they had earplugs.
I was just
going to
say about earplugs.
So this one was a two-man impact mill doing that, which obviously speeded this up a little bit.
So what year are we talking of?
We're talking about the mid to late 1800s.
Late 1800s.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, this is funny because I think this is really one of the better drill collections in the West Coast. There might be some back in where they had, zinc mines or mines in New York or others, but I've been told that some of these drills that are here are really unique and interesting, and we haven't had a drill expert in yet to tell us all, but there's steam drills, and you can go through and look at these other ones. There's a little bit of information written about the drills and the jack stands. There's a, right over here, there's what's called a stoper. It's a flat drill that would raise up, for raising up and going into smaller quarters. And when you see the mine, you'll see how small the vein is, and they would rather take out the quartz and the gold and not the wall rock, because that's, you know, it's harder to take out all that wall rock as well. So the drilling was the first sequence of the mining, and then the blasting, it started out with just black powder, and just, it must have been horrible. And I came, like I said, I started out using fuses, and was very fortunate to come to Allegheny when there were still some older miners around that were working before World War II. Just a tiny, tiny bit of history to place kind of what's happened is that this area was very productive. There were about 350 men that worked at the 16 to 1 at one time. There are mines all over here. It's called the Allegheny Mining District. And up until World War II, it was quite active. In 1934, President Roosevelt made two decisions. He raised the value of gold in relation to the dollar from $20.67 an ounce to $35 an ounce, which created a lot more activity in 1935, 36, 37. Kind of helped people in the Depression as well. And he also did something that I never even learned about until came up here, actually, that Americans were not allowed to own gold. All the gold that was mined had to be sold to the U.S. government. And, you know, and we think we're also righteous and free enterprise, but I didn't even realize that that was one of the restrictions. In 1975, actually December 31st, 1974, President Nixon, because of the tremendous stress on the U.S. gold supply, was forced to do something, and they changed it, and Americans could, once again, it was free, it was a free market again for gold, basically. So it started to go up from, it was already being smuggled into Mexico and all over other parts of the world, and you probably heard stories that the Fort Knox is bare, it's never been audited, so we don't know. Anyways, this had to bring some balance back. Gold went up to $100, and then it went back down, and then it reached a peak in 1980, I think 80 or 81, of $810 an ounce, and then it fell back down into a very low bear market for about 14 years. And right now, it's pushing that $1,000 again, $950 an ounce. Remember, it's just an exchange. And all over the world, and you guys in England, you supposedly have the old men that get together every morning and set the price, you know. And then the market takes over from that period of time. So it's an interesting commodity, and it has, I have to tell you, I think that the U.S. people are so unaccustomed to gold, and other countries understand its storage value of wealth. But here the dollar has been the storage value, so it's not quite as well understood. Blasting phase was something we started out with, just fuse and blast and dynamite, and now we're into what we call non-ELs. It's non-electric. The blowing up the rocks is the least fear that we have as active miners now. But my first experience in probably 1975 was going down into a mine here in Allegheny with another man. His family had owned it, and he was few years older than I am, but we went down and they call it spit the round, light the round, and he said, "You want to do it?" And I said, "Oh, sure." So, and then he said, "Okay, there it goes." And I just wanted to run out of there so fast, but the fuse burned so many feet per second, and we had 4 minutes to get out of the mine or get out of the way, and then listen to the explosion. Now we're using these non-Ls, so it's and everything's timed. You might drill 20 or 30 holes. And then you blow them off in a pattern. You blow the center out first, and then collapse these walls into it. And then the finals are called lifters, and the holes go down, and they try to throw the rock away from the face. So, but they're all timed, and there's really very few that I know of accidents, at least in underground mining. I don't know about the surface guys, probably the same in blasting. Our biggest fears here are really haulage and also rock fall, where the rock, you could fall down unexpectedly, just fall out and seriously hurt something like that. The open pit people in Nevada, their biggest concern is these guys drive these big pieces of equipment off the banks and die. Transporting is really the biggest thing for them. So then the mucking stages start, the drill blast and the muck. Of course, they started out just hand mucking everything, and they pushed it, and they did have mules in the mine, and the miners loved their mules. If you go to the Empire Mine, you'll see more pictures of the Empire Mine down there, and what, you know, there'll be a lot of stories. They'll tell you about all the mule stories. They've got great docents down there. And then it started moving into mechanized, and we still use battery-operated trains here called Lokis or Trammers. And you'll see some of the equipment. The equipment when we go down to the mine is some of it's very, very old and it's still very, very good. So that part of the phase, I'm drifting away because I want to tell you more about this area here. We got the drills, the photographs. There was a Chinatown right up on the top of town. There's some artifacts that were dug up there. There were a total of, I think, close to 2,500 people in this area at one time. But the biggest, that was when the mines turned from placer to underground placers, which was about 1860. There were buried rivers here that contained the gold. There's so many things of the geology. It used to be 5,000 feet more elevation here. And then he wrote it down, which is basically, if you think of the Sierra Nevada. And when we go into the mine, I'll show you, we'll go right to a spot where you can see this. But it's, I'm going to be the Pacific Ocean over here. This is the Sierra Nevada here. And we're standing right on the geological plate tectonics, which was something, you know, in fairly recent geology, where subduction, the Pacific side is coming down and is crashing into this, and is lifting this up, and is going back down in here, and somehow it's sucking the water. I'll show you some spots in the mine that were actually millions of years ago seaweed. And it still, you know, it still fascinates me to understand how all this happens. But the area's been studied. It's one of the richest concentrations of gold in the world. So why don't you walk around here a little bit and look at some of the things. And by the way, anytime, interrupt me or ask a question or, you know, anything that's not comfortable or anything you want to know about, please ask the question, because if you have a question, probably somebody else does too. And honestly, I don't know all your backgrounds. I don't know your levels of interest. I came up here in 1974. Just my background, just very briefly. I was born and raised in Sacramento, and then graduated from UC Santa Barbara with a social science economics degree in 1964. So I'm a senior citizen. I'm 67 years old, and I can draw unemployment, or not unemployment. What do we get now? It comes once a month.
Medicare.
But the job has been interesting. The company is my personal objective. We're having very serious and hard times right now. We're having some very serious financial hard times for a number of reasons. We were over-regulated in the late 1990s. Our PG&E bill went up to about $10,000 a month from $3,000, thanks to our wisdom of our great energy people here in California.
Actually, it was the legislators.
Was it the legislators?
I'm retired PG&E.
Sorry, it wasn't PG&E.
I was on the same side you are.
Yeah, no, we had a PG&E bill. PG&E was wonderful to us. We had $100,000.
Pacific Gas and Electric.
Pacific Gas and Electric.
The power company.
And you know, another thing that's interesting on this electrical, there's the mines really jump-started the electrical transformation lines for the electrical companies.
That's right.
And some of the people that started A.D. Foote, there are some people that started this mining business, they worked hand in hand with the power consumption, with the utilities, because this is this is heavy work. You're blowing up rocks and very awful conditions, potentially awful, and you need a lot of power to do this kind of work. And so the PG&E lines that you passed in here were run over to different mines out in this section, Pacific Gas and Electric and that kind of thing. But we ended up owing them at one point $100,000, which is pretty unusual to be able to stretch them out that long. but everybody was really working, because we've been in business for, you know, so long, and we just have these peaks and troughs. And I've had very good help with them working with us to when we get a little bit behind. But there's definitely an anti-mining movement in California and the United States. You are at the northern end of the California Gold Belt. We're in Sierra County, which is the second smallest county population-wise in California. The next county north of us is Plumas County. That's where basically the gold deposit ends, or starts, wherever you want to say. And it goes down to Yosemite, which is Mariposa County. It's a 200-mile gold belt that has produced billions of dollars of gold. And sad to say, this is the only company that's still working in that 200-mile stretch. Yes?
Is it all underground, or is there any open cast gold?
In the Sierra, it's all underground. And the veins, we're going to, when you walk around here, use the bathrooms, or what you want to do, we're going to rendezvous one more time before we leave here. There's a map in the front, and we'll go into just a little bit of the geology. And I do appreciate your question, seriously, because I sometimes don't know exactly where to go in some certain important areas.
How about the name of the mine?
That's the question always asked, too. The name of the mine itself is called the 16-2-1. Now, there's a 16-to-1 in Nevada, Idaho, Washington, Oregon. This The claim was located in 1896. Some of the properties that this company owns date back to 1853. But now you Brits couldn't do this, but any U.S. citizen could come out in here if you're over 18 years old and go any place in public land in the United States and stake a claim. If you found a deposit of a mineral, you have a right. This is one of the rights that will probably disappear within the next few years, sure. I'm afraid to say. I'm afraid to say it will, and it's a sad loss, very, very sad loss. So you go out, and in 1896, the most important issue in ATP prior to that in the Americans was this monetary system. And in one of the presidential elections, we had a man named William Jennings Bryan running against Bill McKinley, William McKinley, 1896. And that's when they said, "Don't bury me on a cross of gold." That was a very famous saying that the East Coast bankers wanted only gold. The Western people wanted a bimetal currency, silver and gold. So the ratio at that time of the money in the United States was 16 parts silver equaled 1 part gold. So 16 ounces of silver, you have 16 ounces of silver, you have 1 ounce of gold, you two can change. And this is what the politicians and the bankers were trying to change that ratio. So to support this, it was called the 16-1. Then in 1911, the same people or some of their friends, or they expand a little bit, decided to incorporate in California. And they put the word original in front to distinguish this particular 16-1 from any other. And it was an interesting history. And it's surprising when you say this is the oldest U.S. gold company. And we are about as big as a sheet of paper is wide in the whole industry. We're so small. We're a drop of ocean, or a drop of water in the ocean. But it also symbolizes an awful lot of what should be happening, I think, here and in other places with whatever we're doing with our natural resources.
Do you have any problem with flooding here at all then? Because like of our tin mines in Cornwall, a lot of those been flooded and they just couldn't afford to keep them pumped out.
We pump, that's our basic PG&E bill. When we're running, we use electrical power for our air compressors and other items, but we have to pump. And right now we're pumping, I'll show you on the map too where the water level is, what we're doing, but we pump. Let's say we run the pumps 24 hours a day for 2 weeks, and we can have them off for 3 weeks, something like that. But it's the thing about this mine too is it's relatively dry, and it's good hard rock. And when we're over there at the map, you'll see we've got so many openings, and then the pressure, the barometric pressure outside changes the airflow in the mine, so we have really pretty decent air.
So you don't have to ventilate that much then?
No, we only have to ventilate when we go into a closed heading. If we start drifting or working an area where you're going into, you know, extending a level or something like that, a drift out, you need to put air back in there. We're also very regulated. I really can't think of any business that's more regulated than the mining. I know the farmers and ranchers or meat producers all think they're regulated, and the loggers think they're regulated, but we are really regulated.
Does the barometric pressure in the mine differ from the outside a lot? I mean, does it change as you go deeper?
Or? It really doesn't. And it's surprising. The mine I've mentioned to Bill, it's 50 degrees, basically. It could be 52 degrees in some spots, and it'll be, I guess if there's a little bit movement of air and there's a little water dripping, it could be a little bit cooler than 50 or 52.
That's the ideal temperature for a beer cellar, 52 degrees.
Yeah, it is. Well, I'll tell you what, we've done, the reason we're here is that we're creative too. It's also good with the Store California wine. And these guys are building wine cellars right now, and they get their wine in there and they can put it in there for a few years. So I have 600 bottles of wine in another spot, but also interestingly, it's illegal to have alcohol on a mine property, so we have to go put it someplace else. But I like your beer idea, and that, you know, and in reading the history, if you really sometimes if you got a hankering to do something else, read some of this early California history, starting like about 1846 to about 1852. If you pick like even 4 or 5 or 6 years right in there, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, just before it became a state and the Californians that were here, and they were a cross between European stock and Spanish Mexicans and everybody, and they were pretty independent, strange group of people too. And Richard Dana came over 2 years before the mast and was getting cowhides here in California. And then when that skull went at Coloma, when James Marshall brought that back to Sutter's Fort, it really ruined Sutter. You may know that. It ruined him completely. He was a Swiss man that came over here. And
we were there yesterday.
Were you at Sutter's Fort yesterday?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But he was German, wasn't he?
He was actually, maybe, I think he was Swiss. I'm pretty sure he was Swiss.
He was born in Germany.
Yes. Yeah. But he was Swiss, yeah.
And but then you can imagine, well, you're getting a good feel for it. I mean, even think about a 2-day trip getting up here when you got up here in about an hour.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in this day of cell phones, think of just how isolated we are here, but yet all these people, and they brought all this equipment up and did all these things. They really did a wonderful thing. And also, we're getting picked on for killing all the fish and killing all the forest and killing everything in sight. And so just as you're around here, just, you know, especially down at the mine, when we get to the portal down there, remember, there's been 150 years of mining right in this spot. And we've got mountain lions and bears and mud swallows are in this portal. And there's no snakes or anything in the mine. We've never seen snakes, so you're okay there. But it's a long road to try to restore, I think, an acceptance of mining in the United States, and it's really too bad.
On the governor's desk, you talk about regulation in the extreme. He's got a bill now that's going to outlaw dredging on all the rivers in California, which is dredging for gold. Because the environmentalists think it disturbs the fish habitat. Well, obviously those environmentalists have never been up here in the wintertime when probably 100 times more rock is moved in those rivers naturally by the flow of water than the dredgers will all summer long. Yeah. So here again is another opportunity lost because wackos who know nothing about what they speak have convinced our legislatures, now our dumb governor, he's going to sign the darn bill. So you won't be able to, you'll be able to pan and shovel, but you won't be able to use a pump and a hydraulic in the floating dredges in the rivers anymore.
You know what? If I were to bet, he's not going to sign the bill.
That's right. I hope you're right.
And I'll tell you, the other thing, that not only about the storms that are up here and the weather conditions and the whole movement of gravel or in streams, but I dredged for about 3 years when I first came up here. And if you walked in these little tiny creeks, you'll see Kanaka Creek down there, Kanaka was named after some Indians that came up here. Some Hawaiians that came up here. And
It was
Kanaka.
John Kanaka.
Oh, yeah? Well, Kanaka Creek was this is the only one of Kanaka Creek I know in California. But it's almost an intermittent. It'll almost dry up or else it goes underground. You know, it goes below there, and so you can see very little water. But the fish will be in some of those ponds that the dredgers leave. And when I dredged, you look back sometime and the fish are all hanging out right there anyway because you're stirring up some of their food. And it's another one of those things that just, I agree with you, it's too bad. But I'm hoping since he's not trying to run again and he doesn't have any political aspirations, he'll realize it's just nonsense and not cited.
Oh,
I hope so.
Well, yeah, a lot of that environmental stuff is a lot of nonsense.
Yeah, it is.
We go to the other mission.
It's just the same thing.
It's starting to get worse. I think it's just sort of starting out over there now, isn't it, though?
Well, no, we've been going quite a long while. Don't get me started.
Okay. Well, we feel the same way.
Well, you know,
most of us do.
And conservation, if this is a funny thing I've learned about mining versus anybody's other occupation, is you have to fix it. You have to have multi-skills, and you're conserving everything possible because it's so labor-intensive to get, you know, back into where you're going. And we're also just living up here is different from living in the city. So I think, and I don't mean conservative in political sense of the definition, although that might apply too, but to conserve and conserve the resources and not waste them. And it's really, I think it's probably an impossible battle. But that's one of the reasons the museum here has been, was designed to help do that, and that we get school kids to come up, the fourth graders all in California study the gold rush, and we've got several schools bring the fourth graders up on a bus, and we get a chance to show them some things, and they ask great questions. And it's interesting. It's both appealing to men and women. I mean, little children, fourth graders, boys and girls. And so it's sometimes this concept of gold, and it goes to both ways. It's not just a man's world, and I'm really glad to see that. Well, look around here a little more. We're going to go over to that map a little bit, and then we will leave here in just about 10 minutes or so.
Zero, take photos.
Please take all the photos you want.